Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Richard Gordon, and we're going to be talking about two of his books, Quantum Touch, The Power to Heal, and his newest book, The Secret Nature of Matter. Richard maps out new territory in the rarely explored intersection of science and spirituality. Building on the quantum touch technique he developed in previous books, Richard explains how the hands-on energy healing technique that he uses to help alleviate nerve pain, headaches, back pain, hip pain, TMJ, and more, provides a unique window onto the secret nature of matter. He explains how, by examining pelvic and occipital torsion and then aligning people without the use of touch or suggestion, he is able to run a wide range of simple experiments that challenge many dogmas of science. His newest book teaches readers the techniques along with 57 easy-to-reproduce experiments that allow them to test the results. These experiments clearly demonstrate that our consciousness can profoundly influence matter and that an object charged with energy and intent can dramatically affect us physiologically in seconds. For more information, you can visit Richard's website, which is quantumtouch.com, and I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Richard to the show. Good day, sir.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. I'm really looking forward to our chat today. And I have to tell you that the secret nature of matter really grabbed my attention. Now, that the quantum touch is good, but that newest one, you know, with all that science and spirituality connection kind of just grabbed my attention especially. So I'm really looking forward to talking about both, but that in particular. So first of all, I guess what we should do is, if you wouldn't mind, I would love for you to share with the listeners a little bit about yourself, how you became interested in the field of energy healing.
In about 1973 or 74, I went to a doctor who told me that I had a lot of symptoms, but none of them were bad enough to really treat, so I should wait till I got worse and come back so he could give me some medicine. And I thought that was probably the stupidest advice I had ever heard. So I went to a holistic health school. I wrote a book on polarity therapy that became a bestseller in 10 languages for a whole decade. And then right around the time the book was about to come out, I met a gentleman named Robert Rasmussen who demonstrated a method of using breathing and body awareness to accelerate healing. And when I met him, he told a lot of tall tales. I couldn't believe anything he was saying. And then one of the things he threw out is, I just touch people and bones move back to alignment. And he demonstrated on my girlfriend, and I could actually watch her hips rolling back to alignment. And in about 10 or 12 minutes, about half of her scoliosis had straightened out right before my eyes. And in this small group of about 15 or 18 people, we were just all dumbfounded. And I took over in his retirement about 20 years later. I wrote the book Quantum Touch, The Power to Heal, which is in 17 languages now with certified practitioners in over 50 countries. And it shows ordinary people how we can learn to use simple breathing and body awareness exercise without any magic attunements or symbols or anything, just linking breathing and body awareness to be able to bring down pain very quickly. We've just recently completed a study on that topic to accelerate the healing process, bring down inflammation and so forth. And that's what most people are interested in, the ability to alleviate suffering in themselves and others. Then,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'll let you go ahead and finish, and then I'll ask my question.
Yeah, of course. It's a little bit of a long story. About 9 years ago, I discovered that I could work two or three times faster without even touching people. And the quick way of knowing that is, can you align somebody in a few seconds by meditating? And that was my next book, The Secret Quantum Touch 2.0, with a series of new human abilities. And then about 2 years ago, I discovered that I could put consciousness into physical objects and cause that same alignment to occur by just touching somebody with that object. So anyway, that's a really brief overview of over 40 years.
Wow, that's amazing. So, yeah, now let's go ahead and now dive deeper into this. Now, first of all, when you're talking about healing, exactly how would you describe who a healer is? What a healer is?
Great question. A healer, in my opinion, is someone who was sick and got well. And a great healer is someone very sick who got well quickly. Because all healing is self-healing. The cells heal themselves. I don't think anybody knows how to heal their own cells. If you get a paper cut, how do you fix that? I don't know. But the body intelligence and the spiritual intelligence of the body has a wisdom that's way beyond our intellect and knows how to do healing. So what we can do is we can provide an energy environment for the body and spiritual intelligence to accelerate its own healing potential. And that's what the energy healing work does. So we like to think of ourselves as resonant physicians because we're holding a high vibration. And the way we access that high vibration is through breathing and body awareness exercises. Then their body simply entrains or matches our vibration. And we continually raise it throughout the session so we never become tired or drained doing these sessions. We let them bring their energy up to match our energy so that we're all on the same page at the same time. So a physician named Jerry Pittman had written that in its elegance, quantum touch first provides healing for the practitioner. And this is absolutely true.
Well, that's interesting, you know, because first of all, you know, I think that it's great recognizing that all healing is self-healing, you know, and I think that that's, you know, for people who are in, you know, that line of work, it's really important, I think, for the practitioner and the person and the client to recognize that. Now when it comes time to facilitating the healing, working with the energy. Is this something, I mean, this is, I would think then, something that can be learned, that anybody can learn it or certain
Absolutely.
People may be, okay.
Some people are naturally super gifted, but when I was on the road getting this business off the ground, I would give lectures almost every night of the week and workshops every weekend. And I would tell people at the lectures, you'll be able to move the energy so powerfully, you'll be able to see bones moving into alignment before lunch break on the first day, just with a light touch or your money back. No one ever got a refund because everybody can do it. And it's very easy to do. It's probably the easiest skill there is to learn because it only involves breathing, feeling your body, linking the body with looking at the body sensations that you're able to generate with your breath, and then putting your hands on a person and having the intention of doing good. And it's very, very simple, and I work really hard to remove all the woo factor out of it so that people can pick it up immediately.
Yeah. So now when you mentioned that the practitioner is also healed in a way during the process.
Yes.
Now the question that I had with this is that obviously some people, I mean, healing doesn't always happen. I mean, in a sense, there are cases where it doesn't. So my question now is kind of, as I was going through and reading about quantum touch, I was thinking that, you know, recognizing that you know, that there may be a higher plan, you know, that the person,
yes,
you know, goes through the, you know, the life cycle and you know, and ends, you know, that it seems to me then that the process of the work is really to benefit both the client and the practitioner. In other words, I mean, even if it, you know, ends in, you know, someone dying or transition, that the client and the practitioner will learn something through the process.
It's really good that you bring this up, because Quantum Touch, we just did a clinical study that's been published in a peer-reviewed journal, Energy Psychology Journal, and we documented 41 patients with high levels of pain. This is due primarily to fibromyalgia, arthritis, or accidents. And they each got a random session from one of our practitioners around the world. And the result was an average 67.4% reduction of their pain. But the part that I thought was most impressive was that there were 50 pain conditions listed by these 41 patients, and 100% of the pain conditions were improved. Now, are these analgesic? Yeah, in many cases, this is a temporary pain relief, and the entire problem may not have been resolved from the energy healing work. And I developed an entirely other modality designed to get to the core process. Now, when if somebody gets a burn, that's all they need is the pain relief and to accelerate the healing process. But they may have a chronic condition that will get better from the session, but it may not be all they need. They may need to go much deeper. And I found out a way, it took me 30 years to develop a process for people to discover and release and go through the emotional process that the body had the ability to be sick, not as a dysfunction, but a communication from their higher consciousness. So it's a simple 7-step process we could talk about later, but that goes deeper than simply removing symptoms. And Quantum Touch is usually the first step where, okay, let's see if this is what you need. And if you need more, we can go deeper.
Okay. Well, you know, that was you know, when it came time, when I was just kind of pondering, you know, the idea of the healing process, you know, and you mm-hmm. know, when looking at practitioner and client, you know, and just the interaction, it seemed to me that, you know, that there was just something to be learned. I mean, it's like, you know, even if the cycle ends, you know, there maybe the person whose pain was relieved somewhat, you know, even maybe it opens their mind to, you know, a different paradigm than they thought, you know, and maybe supports the practice.
mm-hmm. It goes all the way to the core of their emotional being, that experience they had with dad or the ex or whatever, that's usually what's being expressed through these really difficult health conditions. And when people release those emotions, they can actually experience a complete shift in their reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, when it comes to, you know, part of the scientific process, you know, is replicating, you know, work, you know, and so when it comes to Quantum Touch, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what has been done, you know, and by whom in support of the effects of Quantum Touch?
Yeah, I showed this work to Dr. C. Norman Shealy, the founding president of the American Holistic Medical Association. And he said, well, work all my staff, my nurse, my accountant, my just all the people who are supporting him. And, you know, 5-10 minutes later, all their symptoms were disappeared or gone. And he said, well, let's give you somebody more difficult. So they brought in this 90-year-old woman with severe osteoporosis who barely could walk at all with a walker. And after taking her history for half an hour, I touched her hips and they rolled right back into alignment. The doctor measuring her had her jaw dropping on the floor. And then on the way back to Norm's place, I said, and she could walk about, you know, sprint across the floor at about 1 mile an hour without her walker. I said, oh, this is much better now. Anyway, I said, Norm, are you impressed? He goes, no. He said, some of those people might have liked you a little bit. Some of them might have even been open to what you were doing. I want to see how this works on my most difficult chronic pain patients with 20 and 30 years of intractable pain who have never been helped by any modality. He said, I don't have to do double blinds on everything. I just have to make the test so rigorous, I can't believe anything but the outcome. So we did group quantum touch sessions on all of his most difficult chronic pain patients, and every single one had between a 30 and 70% reduction of pain. Norm called me 2 weeks later to say, oh, my God, the pain relief is lasting in all these people. And I go, that's pretty good. But he was even more impressed that I could affect people's EEG at a distance measured by an electroencephalograph. And then he said, Richard, you're a world-class healer. I said, Norm, this is a basic human skill. So he tested it on his entire staff, and he said, every one of them can affect EEG at a distance. And I said, what a coincidence. Your entire staff are all world-class healers. He said, don't rub it in. I said, but that was the point. The point is, we all have these abilities. It is basic, but because science has been stuck on only measuring things that fit into a formula or can be quantified, they have refused to examine things that don't fit into their small box of reality. You can't quantify your love, your compassion, your gratitude. So they don't really believe these are real significant things. But we're seeing that your love actually has a physiological impact on other people in a measurable and discernible and highly robust, repeatable way.
Yeah. Well, you know, in 30 to 70% reduction is pretty significant, especially when you're talking about, you know, some of those who have, you know, had a chronic pain issue for such a long time. So now, how does quantum touch differ from Reiki?
Well, it's really basic. We have no attunements. We have no symbols. We got no woo. All we're doing is teaching people how to feel their entire body and feel it in waves, and then how to link those body awareness sensations with breathing techniques. And that causes us to lift our energy level higher and higher, and the other person, through a process of resonance and entrainment, simply matches the vibration of the practitioner. So Reiki people have told me that about half of them say that they will become drained or tired from time to time. And the main reason for that is, there's two reasons actually. One is they don't know how to consciously raise their own vibration. And the second is if they drop out of gratitude or joy or the joy of giving, they can then match the vibration of the practitioner. But this also happens to massage practitioners, to dentists, to anybody who's around a lot of suffering and touches people. You will be in training to the person you're working on, and you will feel drained over time unless you know how to raise your vibration. So people working with a lot of suffering often come back very depleted from their jobs.
Yeah. So is the so while they're in the process of working with someone, they're consciously keeping their vibration high, you know, keeping that energy, I guess, flow or recognition high during the process.
It's really simple, and it's not an intellectual process. All you have to do, I'll give you a little demonstration if you're not driving a vehicle right now. You hold up one finger, for those listening to this, if you hold up one finger, put all your awareness into that one finger and breathe as if you're breathing through that finger, and see if you can feel how the skin wraps around the finger, and see if you can feel the blood pulsing through the finger. And see if you can feel the tendons that are inside that finger and the bones inside the finger. And see if you can feel how the fingernail attaches to the finger. And then maybe imagine you have a feather and you're stroking the finger with that imaginary feather, and see if you can feel where you're touching your finger with that imaginary feather. Now, if most people do this exercise, your finger will vibrate, it'll tingle, it'll buzz, it'll get hot, you'll feel pulses, some kind of sensation, doesn't matter what you call it. That is what we're doing. What you've done is you've focused your awareness in your finger and you've generated sensation. When you've generated sensation with awareness, what you're also doing is moving that life force energy, that animating current of life that's been called chi or ki or prana or 70 other words that different cultures have found according to Dr. Beverly Rubik. You have put consciousness through your finger, but we learn to do it through our whole body in waves. And that's what the basic quantum touch training is, whether it's in a live class, a book, or a video that we have online. You can learn how to do this simple technique. We've had, you know, 9 and 11-year-old children learning it and being really excited because now they have superpowers that they didn't have before.
Yeah. Well, that's great. You know, and I think, you know, teaching, empowering children at such a, you know, at a young age is just a wonderful way to, you know, get them prepared, you know, for the challenges that they'll have. Now, along with focus, you know, focusing attention, a couple of times earlier you mentioned the word intention. So how does intention play into this process?
It's sort of automatic at the earliest levels. In other words, if somebody has banged their knee really badly and you feel inspired to put your hands on their knee to do some quantum touch work and to bring down their pain, your intention was established before your hand touched them. You don't have to worry. When you start to walk through the door, you don't have to say, am I really intending to walk through the door? Am I still intending? Is my intention clear enough to walk through? No, you just do it. And that's how intention works. You don't worry you're going to fall off the sidewalk. We set an intention and we just do things. And that's sufficient. But when it comes to exploring the secret nature of matter, intention becomes even more crucial. Because you realize that the very intentions you're putting in are going to have a direct impact. And we can cover that later. But intention is sort of an automatic thing, because if you want to help somebody, that was your intent. And that's what you're doing. That's why you're doing it. So you're already doing it.
Yeah. Okay. Now, earlier you mentioned about with a book number 2 about healing energy affecting objects. So can you talk a bit about, you know, affecting fluids or other objects? Can you talk a little bit about how that works?
Yeah. Actually, that was my 4th book. That's fine. The Secret Nature of Matter. Yeah, that's all good. What happened was, it was Thanksgiving 2 years ago, and my friend Daniel, who had studied my work and even become a practitioner, said he discovered something very interesting. If you make a movie of yourself doing a healing session, people watching the movie will receive healing. And my comment to him was, that's crazy. I can't believe that. And he said, test it. So how am I going to test it? Somebody says they have a headache, maybe they're being nice, or maybe it really did go away. I wouldn't even know how to test it clearly, but I do have one little test. Nobody can untwist their hips while they're standing balanced. If one hip looks an inch and a half higher than the other, no one has the ability to do that. And the cranial bones of the back of the head, if you lift up on the occipital ridge, sometimes you'll see one side as much as half or three quarters of an inch higher than the other side. And that's very easy to measure. It takes 3 seconds to see it, and it's a yes or no answer. So what I did was I made a selfie movie of myself meditating, and I showed that movie to people, and it started causing the alignment. And I thought, well, this is crazy. How can this work? So I made a screenshot of the movie to find out if that worked, and that worked. And then I made a photo of the screenshot and took out the color and reduced it in size, and that worked. And I thought, uh-oh, I may be onto something here. So then I was sitting in a coffee shop, and I had played golf that morning. I was wearing the same sweater, and I reached in the pocket, and there was a golf tee. And on a whim, I thought, what would happen if I put the same energy intention of moving a bone behind the nose and eyes called the sphenoid bone that I use to align people? What if I put that energy intention into this physical object? And then I handed it to somebody and it immediately caused alignment. And I was shocked. So I had to do it hundreds and hundreds of times. An early test that I did was to make sure I'm not fooling myself, because the first rule of any scientific work is don't fool yourself. So I went to the local Whole Foods. My friend Paul had a massage chair there. So I handed him a quarter I had meditated on that I knew had been charged and said, put it on a shelf over here and let me measure some people. And I measured their hips and I walk around the corner for a minute and come back and try to guess whether he had handed them the quarter or not. And it took me a second and a half to measure each person and give a yes or no answer. If they were still very misaligned, the answer was no. And if they were totally aligned, the answer was yes. And after I got 12 correct in a row, I thought, I don't have to do this anymore. I know that it works. So from there, I ran, I think, a total of 57 experiments to explore this intersection of matter and consciousness. I tested every kind of material, glass, plastic, rubber, paper, a leaf, pebble, anything you could think of, and everything worked equally well to hold energy intention and have a physiological impact on people's bodies. So one early conclusion I came up with was, if all matter can hold energy intention, it suggests that everything is made of subatomic God stuff. It's a very technical term.
Goodness. Well, we're about halfway through the show, Richard, so I want to take a quick break. And I do want to invite listeners that if you'd like to call in and ask Richard any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in, and we'll get to that once we come back. So, and when we come back, Richard, I want to, once an object is infused with the intention and the healing properties, my question is, can you change it? Can they be removed? So we're going to talk about that, okay, when we come back. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store. Or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Richard Gordon, and we're talking about quantum touch and also the newest book, The Secret Nature of Matter. Again, you can find out more about Richard and his work by visiting his website, which is quantumtouch.com. Again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. And on that page, you can also see that he's on Facebook, Twitter, and also there's a link to his YouTube channel as well. So I'm following him on both Facebook and Twitter. So this is really going to be I'm really looking forward to following his journey. So everyone go out and get his book. So, Richard, thank you for staying with me.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Sure. Okay, so once an object is infused, you know, like that golf tee or the quarter,
yes.
Will it always stay like that, or
well,
can it be?
I've only been able to
deactivated.
Yeah, there is a way of deactivating it that I found, but so far nothing has lost it on its own accord in the last 2.5 years since I started doing this. So as far as I can tell, it's going to last for a very long time, if not forever. I just don't know. But what I did find was I was trying to say, how can I remove the information from an object as a series of experiments? And what I found was there was only one way that was successful. I mean, I took like a washer and I smashed it to smithereens and it still held the energy. I boiled a penny and it didn't change the information. I baked it in the oven. That didn't do anything. I boiled water and the water still held the charge. But the water that had evaporated onto the lid of the pot had lost the information. Water that was holding information when becoming ice had lost the charge. Ice held the charge when it turned back to water. Now, I can't explain this, but these were the observations of my experiments. So if I had a piece of paper that was charged and I burned it, the ashes didn't have any charge and the smoke didn't have any charge. A candle that's charged, the flame doesn't hold any charge, but the smoke, you know, when you blow the candle out, doesn't hold any charge when I take a photograph of the smoke. A photo of the candle that's charged will hold the energy. But anyway, it was this long series of just basic experiments that I was doing to find out when it worked and why it worked. And then I made a monumental discovery. I think it was experiment 37 or 38, where I discovered conscious entanglement. And that just blew my mind.
Okay. I think we're going to have to explain the conscious entanglement for me and for Lily. I mean, I have just a real light grasp of that. But can you explain exactly
what that is? I did an experiment where I wanted to see if energy would jump between objects. So I laid out a dozen pennies across the table about 3 to 4 inches apart, and there was a woman whose back was to the table because I didn't want her to see what I was doing. I measured her hips, meditated on the penny that was right behind her, and measured her again to make sure I hadn't accidentally aligned her, and I had not. And then I handed her penny number 12 at the end of the line, and as soon as she touched it, she was instantly aligned. And I got very upset. And I go, no, this shouldn't be happening. I only meditated on penny one. Why is the penny 4 feet away actually working to cause alignment? So then my first hypothesis, was maybe it spreads like fire spreads across gasoline. But that didn't make any sense because then the table would be charged, the walls, everybody in the coffee shop, and the whole planet for that matter. So that hadn't happened.
Right.
So I came up with a second hypothesis that maybe when I put all the pennies down, I had joined them together in my mind. So I did an experiment the next day, and I met two women at a fair, and they were both very misaligned. I borrowed a little bit of change because I didn't want to use anything I'd ever seen or touched before, and I just stared at the change in my hands. And my thought form was, I see pennies, nickels, dimes, and quarters. I see all the coins in my hand. They're all here. I see them all. I didn't try to do anything except acknowledge that I see them all and join them together in my consciousness. I put them on a table, handed each of the women one of the coins. I reached in my pocket, pulled out a coin I had meditated on previously. I tapped one of the coins for a split second and measured both women, and they had become spontaneously aligned. So then I had to test this all different kinds of ways, including one of my favorite experiments I did the next day. I was in a cafe that I really enjoyed, saw an old friend, and had her put her change on the table, didn't ask her to concentrate on it. I tapped one of the coins on the table, and it did not cause her to become aligned. And then I tried all kinds of variations where other people are meditating on the objects and joining them together. But what I saw was that when you join objects together in your mind, or people for that matter, anything you do to any one of the objects will have an impact on all of the objects. And this is what I call a conscious entanglement, where objects can be grouped together. So, for instance, I created a pendant, and I joined them all together. I had them manufactured. I joined them all together. And when I sent one out to my top 50 instructors around the world, I told them to put their best healing energy into it. I had already done that and given the intention of aligning people as well. In doing so, they started seeing that it had an incredible effect on people, you know, to accelerate healing. And beyond that, within a month, we had all sold out all 1,000 because their instructors and practitioners and other people had started using them to great effect. So now we have a charged, entangled object that is being held by about 5,000 people now, and every day it gets stronger because we have dozens or hundreds of people adding their energy. And now we're having people add new things to it, like their peak experiences, their depths of their gratitude, their love, their joy, their ecstasies, their super abilities, talents, and skills. We're having them put them in, and we're having people begin to work on extracting and opening up. What's the energy of feeling ever more grateful than I've ever felt in my life? What's the energy and essence of having a photographic memory or whatever it is you want? Somebody's been putting it in there because we have thousands of people now putting their gifts, talents, skills, and special abilities in. And we're seeing phenomena that I just never thought about. Like one woman took her pendant and stroked the cat's back down to the end of its tail. And this adult cat who was born with a bent tail had the tail straightened out. We didn't know we could do these things. I was at a retreat in Cancun, Mexico. And on the very last night of the retreat, some guy was telling me he hadn't breathed through his right sinus in 15 to 20 years or something. And I said, okay, here's two pendants. Hold it on both sides of your sinus. Let's see what happens. Within 5 minutes, he was breathing through his right sinus. Seeing so many things that I just never anticipated. And that is a charged and entangled object. But when I was at the University of Hong Kong and the University of Macau on my last trip, instead of meditating on a whole group of people on stage to untwist them simultaneously using level 2 quantum touch, where I have to join the group in my mind and then turn them into one iconic person and meditate on a bone behind the nose and eyes and give it a little turn, which I did out loud successfully to a group of about 20 odd people on stage, I did it differently the last time because I had everybody hold hands. And then I just reached in a pocket, pulled out a charged coin, and then lightly brushed it for a split second across the woman's hair at the beginning of the line, just a couple of hairs, just think like that, and all the people were spontaneously aligned at once without me having to concentrate. Because holding hands is entanglement. Everybody knows they're touching somebody else. And just by making that contact with intention, but here's another piece of intention that's mind-blowing. Once I made the pendant, I learned I was wrong in some of my conclusions, but not my observations. The conclusion was just simply touching a charged object would cause the alignment, but that wasn't true because I would hand people the pendant and it did not cause alignment. But if I have an untrained person who touches someone with a pendant with the intention of causing alignment, it does work. And I've done that dozens and dozens of times. Well, it's okay, you don't think about my work. Go ahead, touch them with this with intending on aligning them, and it works immediately, as if they knew the technique.
So
there's some kind of trigger mechanism.
My question was going to be, what is recognizing the trained versus the untrained? You know, what is it maybe that the training puts, I wouldn't say barriers, but it structures things where the untrained person wouldn't be, necessarily, following what they might not be kind of drawing from training in order to create the effect?
Well, the thing is that the training is just very basic, that teaches people how to use the breathing, body awareness, and so forth. But what actually makes mm-hmm. this work is having a charged object and having the mm-hmm. intent to use that charged object. And it has nothing to do with the training at that point. So there was one woman who, one of my experiments was, she's a massage practitioner, and she's really good at measuring people too. She knows how to do that. So what I did was I meditated on one of her fingers, and I charged her finger so that it would hold the energy and tension of my work. And then I had her touch somebody with the intent of aligning them, and it worked. And then I tested her 2 weeks later, and it worked. And then I ran into her about a year and a half later, and it still worked. But here's the deal. When she's doing a massage on somebody, she's not aligning them. But if she takes her finger with intention and touches somebody with that finger, it causes the alignment. I have tapped into some amazing mysteries, and I don't even try to figure out all the ins and outs of it. I'm hoping to get this researched at every university, because these human abilities are intrinsic, basic, profound, and valuable to humanity, and they need to be properly researched. Yeah. And I'm kind of a closet scientist, because I love science and I love doing some experiments, but I'm not that guy who has the millions of dollars of research funding or an institution or the ability to really go into depth and detail. I've opened the door. I cracked it open and say, okay, go through here. Look, there's a whole world to explore here. And so that's one of my long-term goals, is to see this work studied at every university, practiced in every hospital, and taught in every school.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think that would be a great accomplishment, because, you know, the world does need that. Now, you know, just by the nature of the subject, you know, sometimes the scientific method, you know, isn't the right tool for measuring, you know, the effect and validity, you know, of some of the things. So, I mean, it seems that, you know, we're going to kind of need to maybe have some better tools, you know, kind of developed,
well,
you're right. Mm-hmm.
You're right. You see, the scientific method is only built around quantifying observations. They have to put everything into a formula or quantify it. Now, you can't quantify your love, your gratitude. You can't quantify those intrinsic internal qualities, nor can you measure or weigh or quantify the life force energy we're working with. But they can see the impact of the energy. They can see the impact the impact of the healing sessions they're doing. So I sincerely believe that this shows that quantum theory is incomplete, because it does not include consciousness into the equations. And consciousness has a physiological impact on other people, plants, animals, and so forth. They can't quantify or even know directly what dark energy and dark matter is, but they know it has an impact. They won't be able to quantify the life force energy or a person's love or gratitude, but they can clearly see that it has a physiological impact. So it's real, but a mystery. It's a real mystery.
Yeah. I agree. And now, when we were talking about, infusing objects and fluids, one of the things in the book, The Sacred Nature of Matter, you had referenced a Dr. William Taylor experiment where it was involved changing water pH. And in that particular one, you know, it was done remotely. And what was interesting was that there was a suggestion that the intention also changed the space around, you know, in those rooms where it happened. So I'm really curious about, because I'm wondering if, you know, the fact that we have like hauntings, or we have rooms where there's, you know, a particular energy in, you know, infused in that, if that's the same kind of energy or effect that we see in those situations.
Absolutely. So, for instance, Joe Rogan likes to talk about one of his favorite comedy clubs, the Ice House, and how there's been it's the oldest comedy club in the world, and how you walk in and you can just feel the laughter coming off the walls. Well, it's the same when you walk into a courthouse and it just feels glum and miserable with all these unhappy people, decade after decade coming through those rooms. Yeah, rooms will hold it. But I think William Tiller was correct in his observations, but incorrect in his conclusions. Because, yes, the water did change pH and the room became conditioned, as he called it. But I don't think it's for the reasons he thinks. You see, his devices, he had these electrical devices that people meditated on. They could have been old cigarette butts they were meditating on for all that it mattered. The power was not in these fancy electrical devices. And the way the room became conditioned was because they always did it in that room and they identified that room with the work. The people had done the work. Similarly, I did an experiment, a homeopathy, where I diluted water very carefully, about 6 trillion dilution, by putting a couple drops in the next bottle and shaking it up. And the last bottle held the energy perfectly and caused the alignment to occur immediately, as if it was like the first one. But I think what may be happening in homeopathy is that one of the things about homeopathy is they palpate the bottles. They pound it over and over again, like 100-fold each time they do it. And they notice each dilution becomes stronger and stronger. I don't think it's the dilution. I think it's that they are adding their energy and intention into it every time they're doing the pounding. And I don't think the remedies would work as well if they were created by a machine as they do by a person. Anyway, it's just a theory
okay.
I have. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, okay. Now, when we were talking about consciousness and how we that sometimes the experiments negate or don't take into account consciousness. One of the other aspects, one of the other things noted in the book, there was a talk about a global coherence project. When it
yes.
talked about, and that particular one dealt with, global reaction to events. So can you talk, in a sense, it seems that this is maybe entanglement of a different sort, in the sense that they're not necessarily.
Yes, absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's fascinating when we're talking about group stuff.
Yeah, they have. All these random number generators all over the planet creating ones and zeros. And then when a significant event happens, Princess Di dies or something, or 9/11, and it shakes up the consciousness. And these random number generators kind of go crazy, like, oh, something's changing. Well, the group consciousness is affecting the matter on the planet, and these random number generators are responding. But to me, this is like a very, very primitive experiment that's saying, yes, when people are upset, the color on the wall changes. But that's sort of, it's almost like a blind person trying to see if there's something to see. And what we're doing is putting glasses on and saying, oh, yeah, if you meditate on this piece of plastic and you touch somebody with it, it immediately causes the effect that you're looking for. So what we're able to do is go way beyond that project with billions of people on the planet, their consciousness shifting, and saying, oh, it's only one person. You can do it right now. You can demonstrate it without any expense. We've had people repeat most of the experiments in my book and validate them themselves, that they're able to get the same effects without any special equipment or expense.
Yeah.
You got hot and boil water, you can do the experiment.
Right. Well, see, to me, that the ability to replicate and see the outcome, the expected outcome, to me that just supports, the truth of the demonstration. you know, and for people to be able to do that, I think, you know, do that themselves. I think it also empowers people to recognize, that they have it within themselves, to make some pretty dynamic changes.
Yes. And ultimately, this leads us to some new understandings of reality. When you consider that these things are happening, it means the mind is not confined to the brain. And that suggests the death of the brain does not necessarily mean the death of the mind. When you consider that all matter seems to be able to hold energy and tension, it suggests that panpsychism may actually be the best explanation, that all matter has consciousness. And again, it points to us living in a spiritual reality. And when we see basic quantum touch and you work with the energy and you don't really understand their physiology, let's be honest about it. Most people don't know what's going on. And I don't really know on a very deep level what's happening, but the body intelligence and the universal intelligence knows how to direct the energy. It corrects for my ignorance, because before I even knew what the sphenoid bone was, I'd meditate on that area. And I don't even know if I should turn it to the right or to the left when I'm meditating, but I just turn it to the right because it's fun. And it works every time. But the universe understands my intention, corrects for my mistakes, and now we're discovering that we can use it for all other kinds of things, like I'm working on projects to slow, potentially stop and reverse aging. And haven't gotten very far along, but I turn 70 next year, and I have no pain. My joints feel as good as ever. I'm stronger than I've ever been in my life. I'm not slowing down, I'm speeding up, and I play golf and I hit the ball farther than I did in my 20s. So it's nobody can believe my age, but I don't believe it either, because I'm not into the script. I'm not buying the script.
Yeah. Well, and when you talk with some people, the people 100 years plus, quite often, they will just say, that they, feel younger, that it's kind of surprising them, that they've been able to last as long as they have. Some of the people will have habits that you would think would, cut life shorter, and yet that's there. So, I mean, there's the power of the mind to be able to affect aging, I think, is just beginning. We're just beginning to understand the possibilities that lie there.
Well, when you realize that you can do these quote impossible things with quantum touch, like align somebody in a couple seconds without touching them, then when you apply that toward working with the pineal, the pituitary, the DNA, the stem cells, and many other functions in the body, we are apparently affecting the physiology of the aging process directly. And people like Aubrey de Grey, who study aging, they say, it's, there's seven different pathways that the body ages, but they all break down to entropy. Now, if you had a pile of blocks and you knock them over, they go from order into disorder, which is what entropy is. But how do you put the blocks back? It takes energy and intention and intelligence. The spiritual intelligence directs it, but the energy intention is something that we can utilize. And because these scientists are not looking at life force energy in their equations and their studies, they're ignoring what may be the most fundamental and profound tool for slowing, stopping, and reversing aging. And I'm planning an experiment this coming year where I will work with those roundworms called C. elegans to see if I can extend their life through energy healing.
Yeah, wow. So if this information were to be taught in universities and hospitals, what would you think what the changes would be? How would life be different if this were more recognizable and utilized?
First off, we'd recognize the massive impact our lifestyle and emotions have on our health. And when people learn how to be emotionally responsible for their feelings and release their old hurts and angers and learn how to forgive themselves, their health would be radically improved. We'd look at the life force energy of the food that we're eating and how it affects people's life force energy. And that would, I'd say it's possible with a combination of nutrition, emotion, and energy healing that we could cut the budget on medical care by 80 to 90% over the decades to come. People wouldn't have to feel so helpless in the face of health conditions if we really studied what would be responsible healing practices and such. We could live in a world where we stopped putting acquisition of material crap as our top priority and put compassion as a top priority, where we want to care about ourselves and each other. I remember listening to a rich industrialist interviewed in Germany, and he said, "How do you feel about the high taxes you pay?" And he said, "I'm fine with it." He said, "Well, why are you fine?" He said, "Well, I don't want to be a rich, poor country." He doesn't want to be worried his children to get kidnapped. He wants to live in a place where people are happy because it's more fun and it feels better knowing everybody's okay. But we've somehow got this mindset, more for me and I don't care about you. And I don't know where that came from, but it's really sick and messed up.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you there for sure. So, well, Richard, this has really been a wonderful chat. I really want to thank you for your time today. I've enjoyed speaking with you and enjoyed reading your book. So really, again, thank you for your time today.
Well, Robert, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Great. Thank you. And again, I'm following you on Facebook and Twitter, so I look forward to following your journey there and seeing more experiments and more books to come. So, and I do invite our listeners to join you there as well. Again, everyone, my very special guest today has been Richard Gordon. We've been talking about his books, Quantum Touch, The Power to Heal, also talking about the newest book, The Secret Nature of Matter. They're really great books, so definitely go out and get them. And also you can find out more by visiting Richard's website, which is quantumtouch.com. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.